What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. It is NBA opening night. I'm recording this on Tuesday, October 22nd. And the season kicks off tonight with Celtics, Knicks, followed by Timberwolves, Lakers. So before we do kick the season off, I did want to just come on here and put in my formal prediction. So I will be going through who I think will finish where in the standings, my playoff predictions. But first, I am going to talk through a list of semi-bold predictions, some of them ranging from quite bold to moderately bold, but just some takes that probably go a little bit against consensus at the very least, that I think will happen this season, or at least have a good chance to happen this season. And before I kick off, I do also want to call out, I just recently posted my top 100 player rankings that are out now, following last season and heading into this season. So if you haven't checked that out, definitely do so. I posted it on all my social media pages, as well as it can be found in the article section of my website. But with that said, let's go ahead and get started. The first semi-bold prediction I have is that the Los Angeles Clippers will finish in the bottom three of the Western Conference. So not only will they miss the playoffs, they will miss the play-in altogether. And the only two teams that I think they will finish ahead are the Utah Jazz and the Portland Trailblazers, neither of which are teams that really have any intent on contending for the playoffs this season. And I think both teams would be content with, you know, at least towards the end of the season, trading guys away, tanking a little bit to improve their lottery chances to get a top pick. The Clippers, on the other hand, do not own their first round pick this year. That will be the Oklahoma City Thunder, who can swap picks with them, which, let me just tell you now, that swap is definitely going to come into effect this season. So it really puts the Clippers in an absolutely brutal spot if my prediction is correct, because they could be giving up a top five pick this year to a team in Oklahoma City who most expect to finish at the top of the conference. But the reports are that Kawhi Leonard is going to be out indefinitely. And I said this well before that report even came out, that for as frequent as his injuries are, they tend to be equally as ambiguous most of the time. There's always weird reporting around them. You don't really know exactly what's wrong. They rarely give a timetable, and when they do, it seems optimistic and tends to take longer than you think. And so this one is no different. I mean, this was a guy who was supposed to play in the Olympics and basically got told by the team that he had to not be on the team because it wasn't healthy enough. So the thought that he was going to try to play in the Olympics and then now he's still not ready for the season, months later, after he missed most of the postseason last year too, and when he did play, he was a compromised version of himself. This is a guy who at this point in his career is 33 years old, and while he did play 68 games last year, as I mentioned, he got hurt right before the playoffs and was not able to finish the playoffs. Then last year, he played only 52 games. Then after just two games in the postseason, got hurt and missed the remainder of that postseason as well. Then in 2022, didn't play a single game, missed the entire season because of injury. Then in 2021, also only played 52 games, also got hurt in the playoffs in that second round series against Utah, went on to miss the remainder of that postseason. And then even 2020 was his last, if you want to call it, healthy season, and he still played only 57 games that year. So I know that this has always been a risk for the Clippers, but at this point, they have no margin for error. In the past, without Kawhi, they could at least somewhat stay afloat because Paul George has proven to be, at least in spurts, a guy that can be close to a number one option, at least on a playoff team. Not a contender, but at least a team that can make the play-in, compete for a postseason spot. We saw in 2021 with just Paul George, they still made the conference finals and lost in a competitive series. We saw in 2022, Paul George missed a huge chunk of the season, yet they were still right there in the postseason conversation, lost in the play-in, but Paul George didn't play in that game. But Paul George is no longer on the basketball team. And so That margin for error they've had in the past is just not there. They are going to be reliant on James Harden and role players, which, you know, if the year was 2017 or 2018, maybe that would be a viable formula. But James Harden is 35 years old now. And again, I know he played 72 games last season, but only 58 the year before that, 65 the year before that, 44 the year before that. So he has not been durable at all either. And he also just posted the lowest points average he's had since he was in Oklahoma City back in 2012. He posted the lowest assists per game that he's had in a season since 2019 with Houston back when he was 29 years old. And he's obviously lost a step defensively. Not that he was ever really good on that end, but he doesn't put much effort in there. And so he's not a viable number one option at this point in his career. He just isn't. I mean, he's questionably a viable number two option at this point. He's probably best served as a number three like he was last season. And even that wasn't good enough for the Clippers to make any noise in the postseason, even though they had a relatively good regular season. But look, the rest of the Clippers roster, it's just not good enough. It's just not good enough. I mean, after Harden, you're going to be relying on guys like Norman Powell, Terrence Mann, Derek Jones Jr., Zubats, like Chris Dunn, Amir Coffey, Nick Batum, Mo Bamba, all guys that are not scorers. None of them. Maybe Norman Powell is the closest thing to a second option, but he's been a sixth man his whole career, basically. Like, he's a microwave scorer off the bench. I just don't believe that a team with Norman Powell as their number two option can be even close to a play-in scenario this season. So I think the Clippers are in big, big trouble. I might even have them lower if they had incentive to tank, because they might just go that route. But obviously they don't have that incentive. But do they rush Kawhi back out of fear of giving a top five pick away, or do they let him take his time? Either way, I don't think it's going to be a good result for them. And so to me, the Clippers are going to finish below teams like Houston, San Antonio, Sacramento, Golden State, all of the playoff mainstays. Like, I think they are the team that could drop precipitously in the standings this season. We normally have at least one team that does that each year. It was Memphis last season. But I think this is going to be a year from hell for the Clippers, and it might be the beginning of the end, because Kawhi Leonard is owed a lot of money. Nobody's going to want him, and there's just no reason to believe that he's going to stay healthy moving forward. And so I'm worried for the Clippers, and I do not think they are going to make the play-in this season. My next take is that the Atlanta Hawks will make the postseason. It seems that there is a consensus top eight in the East with Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Indiana, Cleveland, Orlando, and Miami. And those are the exact eight teams that made the postseason last year. But it is very rare for a conference to send the same eight teams to the postseason in back-to-back seasons. So even though almost everyone I've seen is picking those eight teams to make the playoffs, there's almost guaranteed to be one surprise team. And I think Atlanta has the best shot to be that surprise team, because I think even though they lost to DeJounte Murray, I think they're better in terms of how they fit than they were with DeJounte Murray, despite him being much more talented than the guys they got back in the deal, Dyson Daniels and Larry Nance. I kind of like what they have going for them. I mean, first off, Trae Young is just always going to provide you with a strong offensive floor. If you exclude last season when he missed a good chunk of the year, almost 30 games, the previous three seasons with Trae Young on the team, they were eighth in offense, second in offense, and seventh in offense. So having Trae Young in your team has been good for basically a guaranteed top 10 offense in the league. And the area the Hawks have really struggled is defensively. And I think that they have a good infrastructure to be a lot better defensively this season, because when they traded for DeJounte Murray, he was advertised as an all-star, a two-way player that is going to be a good fit next to Trae because he can take some of the defensive pressure off of him. But that's not how it played out. In reality, DeJounte Murray just decided that he wanted to be an offense-focused player. And while he did put up some nice stats, it was a clunky fit on offense next to Trae. And defensively, he just kind of stopped caring. I mean, he was a shell of what he had been previously defensively. And so I think Dyson Daniels is the ideal fit next to Trae. Obviously, he struggles a little bit as a shooter. He's only a 31% guy from three for his career, but he's got a nice foil behind him in the bench with Bogdanović, who is obviously a very good three-point shooter. So that pairing, kind of offense, defense, they can put next to Trey. But Dyson Daniels is a really, really good defender, and I've always liked him. I thought he probably should have been getting more minutes on New Orleans over the past few seasons, but they had kind of a log jam at the wing position. But Dyson Daniels is a guy that can play the one, the two, the three, even up to the four, because he's 6'8", and he has guard-like skills. He's got a really good feel for the game. He's a good passer, a connective piece, and a really good defensive player. He's got length and can really lock down on that end. So I think having him next to Trey is actually a better fit than DeJounte Murray, even though Murray is a more talented offensive player. I just think the DeJounte-Trey fit was a clunky fit from the start. I was not high on it when they made the deal, and I think they made the right decision getting out of that pairing. But again, I think Dyson Daniels could be a player to watch to have a breakout season. I mean, he's only averaged 5 points per game for his career. But again, he's been in a limited, inconsistent role. And we've seen, at least in flashes, that he can be an impact player on both ends. And so I really like him next to Trey. I also am very high on Jalen Johnson. He was spectacular down the stretch last season, averaged 16 points, 9 rebounds, just under 4 assists. Posted career high from three-point range at just under 36%. And so, look, if he can be a reliable outside shooter to go along with the freak athlete that he is, the monster in transition, he, again, also has guard-like ball skills, especially in the open court. He is an underrated passer. He's a good connective piece offensively. Like, if he can be a reliable second option, close to 20 points per game, rebound the ball, do a little playmaking as well, then I think he is also a really good fit next to Trey offensively. I think they can form a really nice duo on that end. And then I just kind of like their depth and some of the other stuff they have. I mean, just going down the roster, I already mentioned Bogdanović. He's still a very useful and good offensive player, especially as a sixth man off the bench. Clint Capella is somehow only 30 years old. Feels like he's been in the league forever. But look, he is a consistent 12 and 11 pretty much every night, still a block and a half, a good rim runner, a good rim protector, and he's been a good fit with Trey. I mean, Trey is one of the best pick and roll partners in the NBA, really good at getting bigs lobs and the ball in the pocket where they can just lay it right in. I've always liked Okongwu as a backup. They could even consider trading Capella, move Okongwu in the starting lineup, get some assets back for Capella. I like Larry Nance. Kobe Bufkin has showed some flashes in preseason and in summer league, their first round pick from a year ago. And then, well documented, I'm not the biggest Reese Hachey guy, but look, he looked pretty good in preseason. And if he can even just give them any sort of 3-and-D presence, more so than what DeAndre Hunter's been able to provide them, then it's just going to be a plus. But I think they've got a lot of smart, high IQ guys. I think they've got a lot of guys that can play on ball or off ball, good cutters. A little better defensive personnel than they've had in the past. And again, Trae Young gives you a massive floor offensively, and I think they should be better defensively. I still think Quinn Snyder is a good coach. And look, somebody is going to surprise in the Eastern Conference. I can almost guarantee it's not going to be the eight teams that everyone thinks it is. It just rarely happens that way. And so to me, the Hawks are the best bet to kind of crash the party. I don't think they're going to be a top six seed or anything like that. I think they'll be a play-in team, but I think they work their way into the postseason as a 7 or 8 seed. I think that they are going to win 40 to 45 games. And I know they've been really mediocre over the past few seasons, but look, the last two years that Trey played without DeJounte Murray, they went a combined 84 and 70. That is 45 win pace. And I think this team has more talent and is better equipped to be competent defensively than some of those previous teams that Trey had. And those teams were still winning 45 games. And the bottom of the East is terrible. So there's going to be wins to be had in the conference. So I think they're going to be in that 40-45 win range. I think they will sneak into the postseason. And Atlanta's sort of my surprise crash the party team in the East this year. My next semi-bold prediction is that the Boston Celtics, while they will have a very successful regular season, not only will fall short of repeating, but they will lose in the second round this season. And I am I'm far from a Celtics hater. I picked them to win the championship before last season. I had them as my champion pick all season long. I picked them to win the championship before the postseason as well. So I was all in on the Celtics last year. And it's not that I'm suddenly out on them necessarily. I just, as a precedent guy, a NBA history guy, history says that it's unlikely that they will repeat. And just looking at this century, among all teams to win a championship and then go on to make the finals the next season, the only teams that have done it are the three-peat Lakers with Shaq and Kobe, the 04 Pistons made it the following year in 2005, the Lakers who went back-to-back with Kobe Bryant and Pau Gasol in 09 and 2010, the Big Three Miami Heat, and then the Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Golden State Warriors, and then the LeBron James-led Cleveland Cavaliers. So basically what history tells us is that so far this century, in order to make it back to the finals after winning it, you basically need a historically great player like a Shaq, a Kobe, a LeBron, a Steph, a KD, or you have to be a dynasty-level team like the 01 Lakers and the Warriors, or in both those cases, check both boxes. And of course, there is the outlier of the 04 Pistons. Feels like they're an outlier for a lot of things. So I don't typically count them as part of precedent for most things like this, because it seems like everything you could say, with the one exception being the 04 Pistons. And hey, the Celtics have been compared to that team to a degree. But the point is, the Celtics do not have anybody that even remotely qualifies for a historically great borderline top 10 player. Nor do I think that in today's modern NBA, with all the parity we have, that they will be a dynasty. We have had six consecutive different NBA champions. And in that span, only two teams have made the finals twice, the Heat, who lost both times, and the Celtics, who lost in 22 and then won in 2024. So I just think in today's NBA, it is extremely, extremely difficult, not only to repeat, but to make consecutive finals. If we just look at the past couple years, Denver won it in 2023. They were considered by many, if not most, to be the favorite going into last year, not only before the season started, but going into the postseason. They lost second round. The Golden State Warriors in 2022, they were one of the favorites going into the next year as well. They also lost second round and were only a sixth seed the next season. The 2021 Bucks, they were among the favorites, if not the favorite going into the next year. They were at least the favorite in the East going into the postseason. They also lost second round. The 2020 Lakers, they were definitely viewed by most to be the favorite in the Western Conference again the next year. They lost in the first round. And then the 29 Raptors, kind of hard to compare only because they did lose Kawhi Leonard, but they again lost second round. So we haven't had a champion make the conference finals the year after they won it since the Warriors back in 2019 when they lost in the finals after winning the previous year. So it's been a long time since we've seen a team accomplish that. And I know it sounds kind of ridiculous to say now because, I mean, making the conference finals shouldn't be that hard for a Celtics team that's made five in the last, I think, 7 years it is. However, it would have probably sounded equally silly for me to say that the Nuggets weren't going to make the conference finals, or the Warriors weren't going to make the conference finals, or the Bucks weren't going to make the conference finals, or the Lakers weren't going to make the conference finals in those seasons that they followed up their championship with. And a lot of those were due to injury. I mean, Chris Middleton got hurt in the 2022 playoffs. AD got hurt in the 2021 playoffs. Jamal Murray was banged up last year for Denver. But hey, that's part of it. Part of why it's hard to make the finals consecutive years is because you got to have injury luck to make it. And Boston, I know Porzingis was banged up last year, but he's already injured again. Al Horford is pushing 40 as his replacement in the meantime. Jrue Holiday is also 34. And I know Brown and Tatum have been wildly durable. But, I mean, do we think those guys are going to just play 80 games every single game for their entire career? It's possible. And I'm not projecting injury for them. I'm just saying that injury luck is massive in winning a championship. And even though Boston had Porzingis out, they got significant injury luck for their opponents. Everybody they played got hurt. They went the entire Eastern Conference playoffs without having a single full series against any of the top six or seven other players in the East that are not on the Celtics. Dame, Giannis, Brunson, Embiid, Maxey, Halliburton, Donovan Mitchell, Jimmy Butler, all these guys, either they avoided playing them all together or they were injured during the series that they played them for at least part of the series. And so I just don't think it's going to happen again. I think the East is much better. I think the Knicks are a serious threat to knock up Boston because I think they match up well. I think Milwaukee, if they're fully healthy, we've seen that they can make it really difficult on Boston because for as great as Boston is and all their defensive versatility, I'm not sure they have a great answer for Giannis unless you're putting Tatum on him. But, you know, that's a lot to ask out of a guy that's going to be your leading scorer. And with Philadelphia, I mean, if Embiid can finally stay healthy, I think he is such a wild card that they won't have an answer for. Porzingis is a great rim protector and weak side help defender, but I don't think he's really great at guarding big straight up like that. And so I think it's going to be really difficult for Boston to go back-to-back. I think it'll be difficult for them to make the finals again. And I'm going to go as far as to say they won't make the conference finals because recent history has told us that it's really hard to even get back to there. And this could look silly. I'm aware of that. But I think the East is due for a new team to come out this season just because of the parity that we have. And I think Boston, while still supremely talented, while on paper still the best team in the conference, if not the entire league, while they should be viewed as the favorite, I think that there are a lot of external factors that could prevent them from getting there. Up next, I think that the New Orleans Pelicans will trade Brandon Ingram midseason for a center. And I don't know exactly who it's going to be. Could be DeAndre Ayton is an interesting name to think about considering the Blazers just drafted Donovan Clingan. They still have Robert Williams. And Ayton has kind of fallen out of favor pretty much everywhere he's played in his career. His contract, which once looked very gross, if you will, is a lot more palatable these days just because of the way the cap has gone up. And there's a lot of players in the same tier of player of Ayton that are getting similar contracts. Plus, he's only got a couple years left on that deal. So I think it could make sense for them if they add a center there. I think Jared Allen makes a lot of sense. This is a trade that's been talked about for a while because the Mobley and Allen pairing has given them mixed results. You know, they've been really good defensively, especially in the regular season with those two, but Mobley has not developed from the outside as much as you would have hoped. Jared Allen is a non-shooter. Mobley shot a little bit better last year, 37%, but it was low volume. And he still is not respected as a shooter out there. And so their spacing, especially in the postseason, has been pretty ugly at times. And they have not looked good offensively throughout the entire two-year tenure of those two players getting postseason reps together. And so I think Jared Allen for Brandon Ingram makes a lot of sense as a trade because Allen would plug in perfectly in New Orleans because they need rim protection, they need size, they need rebounding, they need defense. And Allen brings all of those things. He's a low-maintenance player. He doesn't need additional touches. He'd run a very good pick-and-roll with DeJounte Murray or C.J. McCollum or even sometimes maybe even Zion Williamson. I also think Brandon Ingram is a good positional fit for Cleveland. They've got two very dynamic guards in Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell, but they've been thin at the wing position really throughout their entire tenure together. They've mixed out Isaac Okoro, Chetty Osman, Caris LeVert, who's really more of a guard, Max Strus, who's a little bit undersized to be playing the three, and Max Strus is injured right now anyway, so they don't have a ton of options at the wing spot, whereas Brandon Ingram would instantly be a massive upgrade for them. I do think a little bit of the same concerns with Ingram in New Orleans would exist in Cleveland, in that Garland kind of needs the ball to be successful, Mitchell needs the ball to be successful, and Ingram kind of needs the ball to be successful, but I think they're it seems more doable in Cleveland, in my opinion, because ultimately Garland is kind of a pass-first guy anyway. Plus, there's just less mouths to feed there because Mobley's not really a guy demanding shots. So Ingram, at the very least, can be the second or third option there offensively, and I think he gives them size and length that they lack on the wing right now. So I think that could be a really interesting trade, a mutually beneficial deal. I'm sure there would have to be some additional salaries and picks involved. I think as currently constructed, Ingram is probably a better player than Jared Allen. However, he's on an expiring deal. He's going to need to get paid. Allen is on one of the best contracts in the NBA, very team friendly. So from a value perspective, I could see Allen having more value despite Ingram being maybe a better player. So maybe a one-for-one does work out because of that, but who knows? For salary purposes, they would definitely have to include some additional salaries as well. Or maybe it's somebody like a Nikola Vucevic, or maybe it's a Robert Williams, like I mentioned, who's still on Portland and could be available. There are a number of options, but the point is the Pelicans desperately, desperately need to add a center. And it sounds like for a while they've been wanting to move off Brandon Ingram. If you go for a guy like Robert Williams, you probably wouldn't even necessarily need to include Ingram. But if you're going for bigger fish like Ayton or Allen, then I do think Ingram probably has to be in that deal, if not just for salary purposes alone. But New Orleans, I really want to like them this year. I'm a big Zion believer. I think he's I have another prediction for him later on. But the point is, they don't have a center. They desperately need one. And so I do think at some point in this season, they will trade for a center. And I do think Brandon Ingram will be the casualty of that deal, just because he seems like he's the odd man out. They have refused to give him an extension. And even in Nikola Vucevic, who, you know, passes prime, not a very good defensive player, but still can do some useful things offensively and spread the floor a little bit. Even that for me would be a huge add for them, even though I think they can do better than that. And if they're trading Ingram, I'd hope they could get Vucevic plus some other assets back. So we'll see. Maybe Chicago doesn't want to do that. But I do think the Pelicans will finally move Ingram, and I do think a center will go their way. I think the Jared Allen trade makes the most logical sense, but it would probably require Cleveland to stumble a little bit, maybe get off to a little bit of a clunky start offensively. Because if they're rolling, then I don't see them really messing with it, at least not until after this season if they fall short in the postseason once again. All right, my next prediction is that the Milwaukee Bucks will make the NBA Finals. I already mentioned that I think Boston will fall short this season, and I don't even necessarily think Milwaukee is going to be a top two seed in the East. I think they might take the regular season a little cautiously. Giannis is coming off an injury last season. Dame is coming off an injury from the postseason and got off to a little bit of a slow start last season. Chris Middleton already reportedly out indefinitely, not going to be ready for the start of the regular season as he's recovering from double surgery on his ankles, which obviously doesn't sound great. But I think that they can survive in the regular season without Middleton, or at least with a compromised version of Middleton, which is kind of what we've gotten out of the regular season for him over the past few seasons. He hasn't been able to reach the 30-minute per game mark over the last 2 years. A lot of that obviously based on minute restriction situations, and I imagine it'll be something similar this season. But the point is, I expect a very big bounce-back season from Dame. I'm high on Dame. I think that last season was not him truly declining, but more so him just adjusting to a new team. He had a new head coach, then switched head coaches mid-season. He had never switched teams in the past before. There were reports that he was not working out over the summer out of fear of getting injured because he didn't want to ruin his trade value. And so he came into the season a little out of shape. Then the whole Terry Stotts blow-up thing happens in training camp, or he storms out and quits before the season even starts. So there was just a lot of moving parts to the season last year, not even to mention that they just didn't have very good depth. And they still don't have phenomenal depth, but to me, they have a lot better depth. I think that the Gary Trent Jr. signing is a huge upgrade for them over Malik Beasley. Beasley probably a better shooter. Gary Trent better at virtually everything else on a basketball court. I think Connaughton did not have a good year last year, but I think Taurean Prince can come in and do a lot of the things that Connaughton did do in the past when he had played a little bit better. Andre Jackson showed some flashes for them last season. DeLon Wright, I think, was a good pickup. He's certainly an upgrade over what they had last year at the backup guard spot with Campaign and then Patrick Beverley, just because he's a better offensive player than Beverley, better defensive player than Campaign. He's kind of like a in between of the two. And I think he's just going to be able to play next to Dame. He can play in place of Dame, obviously. And ultimately, this is a bet on Giannis. People like forget how good this guy is. And look, if he did not get hurt in the postseason last year, I think we would be talking about this Milwaukee team majorly differently because they definitely would have beaten Indiana. That series still went to six games with Dame missing two games and Giannis not playing a single game. It still went to six. So I have no doubt that they would have won that series if Giannis, maybe even if Giannis missed two games, they still could have won the series. And then against that depleted Knicks team, there's no way they wouldn't have knocked them off either just because of how injury prone they were and the lack of bodies they had to guard bigger players like a Giannis. So I know they would have won that series too. And then we're looking at Milwaukee in the conference finals. And after all the hectic external things they had going on last year, for them to then be sitting in the conference finals, losing to a Boston team that was historically great, nobody would have looked at that as necessarily a failure of a season. Yet because of injuries, they lose first round and most people view it that way. So I think they were closer last year than people want to give them credit for. I think Giannis is still unbelievable. He's still not even 30 years old. He just put up the most efficient season of his entire career, was spectacular in the postseason, a career high in assists last year, over 30 points per game, top four MVP finisher, received votes for Defensive Player of the Year as well, first team All-NBA. Like, he's a top three player in the league. He still is. And to me, that kind of star power always puts you in the conversation. And so to me, all they really need is Dame to have a bounce back year. They need at least one or two of those role guys like Gary Trent, DeLon Wright, Taurean Prince to stick and play well this year, which I think is possible. And then the last and the key piece here is Chris Middleton. They need him to be healthy come postseason time. I think, look, if as long as they're a top four seed, even if they're number four, I think they'll be totally fine come postseason time as long as Middleton's healthy. So let him take his time, ramp him up, get him ready to go. And look, he's been really good in the postseason over the last few years, even though he has not been super good in the regular season. I mean, even last year, 15 points a game in the regular season, bumped that up to 25 a game on 48%. So he looked like his old self, 5 assists, 9 rebounds. And then the year before that as well, when they lost first round, 24 points a game, 6 assists, 6 rebounds, 47%, 41% from three. Like, he's been, when it's come down to it and he can actually push his minutes a little bit into the 35 per game range, like, he's been his old self, at least offensively. He's definitely lost a step defensively. But the point is, like, look, if they can get that version of Middleton offensively with a bounce back Dame season with still Giannis in his absolute prime, with more stability and continuity from a year ago with the year two with Dame, with Doc Rivers like not getting fired midseason like Adrian Griffin did, having a consistent system throughout the entire season with some improved role players on the margin. Like, I just am higher on Milwaukee than most. I think that Philadelphia has their own injury issues. I think New York is probably equally as thin from a depth perspective as Milwaukee is, but people don't really want to talk about that. I think they're an OG Anunoby injury away from being very depleted on the wing and not having anybody to guard a player like Giannis, for example. Your best option at that point is throwing Karl Anthony Towns or Precious Achiuwa on him. And so for us to sit here and be like, well, Middleton's injury prone, well, so is Anunoby, you know? So if they're in that scenario, then they're also one injury away from Milwaukee, I think, winning a series against the Knicks pretty easily. And so Boston's obviously going to be their top contender. But I already kind of mentioned, like, I just feel like they won't have the same luck that they had a year ago in terms of the teams they get to play. And so I think Milwaukee would be a much more scary opponent for Boston than anybody they faced last season. And we've seen Giannis look dominant against Boston in the postseason in the past. And I know they have different personnel, but even that team that they faced back in 2022, that Boston team was the number one defense in the NBA. They were spectacular. They had way more bodies to throw at Giannis than they have now because they had guys like Grant Williams. Al Horford was a younger, better version of what he is now. Now they really would probably have to potato him on him. And that might be their only option. I mean, none of the bench guys are going to be able to handle it with, like, Sam Hauser, for example. I don't trust Horford to do it at this point in his career. He was getting pretty exposed at times in the postseason last year. Porzingis, I just don't know if he has the foot speed to stay with a Giannis, especially as he's getting downhill from the perimeter. And then the Brown, White, and Holidays of the world are a little too undersized, in my opinion. So I think Giannis is the cheat code that could potentially take out a Celtics team. I think that they match up relatively well with New York and New York has their own depth issues. And then I also think, you know, Philadelphia, it's hard to trust them just because we haven't seen it out of them. And there you have as much of an injury concern as anybody in the league. So to me, I think Milwaukee also will benefit from being the under the radar team. Nobody's picking them. Nobody really has given them any chance. I think a lot of people have them as the fourth team in the East, which I think is just disrespectful to Giannis. And so I'm picking Milwaukee to make the finals, and I think it'll be a full-on revenge tour for Giannis and the rest of the Bucks. My next semi-bold prediction will be that Reed Shepherd will be so good that he will supplant Jalen Green in the starting lineup in Houston, and Green will turn out to be the odd man out and likely be dealt at the end of the season, if not during the season. And this is kind of a two-folded thing because I'm very high on Reed Shepherd, and I'm also not very high on Jalen Green. I mean, Jalen Green came into the league as an inefficient, high-volume scorer and shooter, an inconsistent outside shot, a guy who doesn't take great shots, a guy who's a little bit of a ball stopper, and a guy who, again, just one of the least efficient players in the NBA. And in his now heading into his fourth year, he's still that same guy. I mean, he was just under 43% as a rookie, just under 42% as a second-year player, a little above 42% last season. His three-point percentage, 34%, 34%, 33%. Like, his efficiency has not gotten any better. He's gotten a little better as a playmaker. His assists have gone up over the past couple of years, but his turnovers have also gone up in that same span. So a lot of that just has to do with his usage. His points actually went down last season, which I don't hate because it means he was taking a little bit of a step back as an offensive option for them just with VanVleet and Şengün breaking out, which is probably what they need. But I'm not a Jalen Green guy. I really like the Rockets, but my reluctance to have them totally ascend into like the playoffs, for example, starts and ends with Jalen Green. I just don't like him on this team. I like so many things about what they have. I love Şengün. I'll get to Reed Shepherd. Obviously, he is a huge part of this prediction overall. I really like Jabari Smith too. I know he's coming along slowly, but I think he looked a lot better last year than the year before. He's still very young. I think he is going to turn into a really nice, probably never a star, but like just a really solid starter, a guy who stretches the floor, versatile defender, can do a little bit of shot creation. And I think the pairing of him with Şengün as a playmaker and then a guy like Reed Shepherd as a playmaker, I think is going to bode really well for him long term. Fred VanVleet's been awesome for this team. But I just, as much as I don't like Jalen Green, I equally love Reed Shepherd. I had him as my number one prospect. If you went, go back and listen to my draft preview, I have been extremely bullish on him. And look, he lit it up in summer league. He was very impressive in the preseason as well. And he showed flashes in those little highlight tapes that the Rockets released on Twitter. Like, the dude is just active. He makes things happen. He is a defensive playmaker, an elite shot blocker for his size, amazing hands, getting deflections and steals on the defensive end. And at the same time, one of the best shooting prospects we've had, maybe the best shooting prospect we've had since Steph Curry. And he's got a little bit of Steph Curry in him with the way he plays offensively too. He can play with the ball. He can play off the ball. He's a good decision maker, high IQ player. He obviously doesn't pop off the screen at this short little white guy running around, but he's also deceivingly athletic, which I know we always say a lot, but he had the highest standing vert of anybody in the NBA combine for rookies this past season. Like, he is a good athlete. I love everything about Reed Shepherd. The only concern with him to me is like, he's a little undersized, but to me, he can play the point guard position. He can play off ball. And I don't think he's going to start the season, obviously. And I think his minutes will be a little bit on the lower side at the beginning of the season. But I think he's just going to continue to play better and better as the year goes on, to the point where Udoka has no choice but to play this guy more and eventually start him. I just think he's going to be too good to not start. And I don't see Fred VanVleet getting benched because he is a proven commodity, really the leading offensive presence on this team from like a playmaking and the adult in the room on the court. And so Jalen Green, to me, I know they just gave him an extension, but to me, he just feels like the odd man out. I just don't see what he brings to the table that can't be replicated. There's a lot of players that can shoot the ball 18 times and score 22 points a night. It's not that difficult if you have any level of shot creation ability. And I bet a lot of them can do it at a higher percentage than 42% from the field. So he's not exactly a defensive stalwart either. I mean, Reed Shepard, to me, is probably already a better player than Jalen Green at this exact moment. But obviously, him being a rookie, Green getting the just getting paid, having the pedigree of being on this team for a couple years now, he's going to be the starter. But I think by year's end, Jalen Green is the odd man out in Houston. I think he will get moved to the bench in favor of Reed Shepard before the season ends. Up next, I think that the Phoenix Suns will be a top three seed in the Western Conference. I talked about them at length in my previous podcast, but I just think that this is a team that won 49 games last season, and they improved in so many ways. Like, even the biggest Suns skeptic will have to look at this team and say that they're better on paper than they were last season. For starters, I heard so much about Phoenix doesn't have a point guard. They don't have a point guard. They need a true point guard. Well, guess what? They got two point guards, both of which are extremely competent, particularly at playmaking and not turning the ball over. And so last year, they were a high turnover prone team, particularly in the fourth quarter where they were historically bad. And now they're going to have one of Tyus Jones or Monte Morris on the court almost at all times. I'm sure there will be some times where Booker or Beal still play a little bit of point guard, but only in spurts. But the point is, they're going to have an adult ball handler on the court that is a player that is uniquely good at taking care of the ball. Both of those guys rate out extremely well all time in terms of assist to turnover ratio, with Tyus Jones actually leading the NBA in the history of the league in that exact category. So they got the absolute best of the best at the one thing that they probably needed at the point guard position. So that should help the team immensely. Number two, their bench and depth is way better than it was last year. I mean, last season coming into the year, they had guys like Yuta Watanabe as like the first or second guy off the bench. They were starting Josh Okogie on opening night because Bradley Beal couldn't play. Drew Eubanks played almost every game for this team as the backup center. That guy was awful for Phoenix last season. And to the point where I know he signed in Utah. I wouldn't have been surprised if he was out of the league after that because of how poorly he played. Jordan Goodwin got minutes for them early in the season. He's now a two-way guy, a fringe roster player. They played David Roddy minutes. Nasir Little was in the rotation. Kata Bates-Diop, who's been traded multiple times this offseason and is now cut and a free agent. Like, they were playing guys who aren't NBA players this year, and they were super important and needed to be relied upon in the rotation. This year, they have Grayson Allen off the bench, who just posted a career-high 46% from three-point range and led the entire NBA, one of the best shooters in the entire league. They have Monte Morris, who I mentioned, one of the best or better backup point guards in the NBA still at this point. Still under 30 years old, even though it seems like he is on the older side, he still should have a lot in the tank. Royce O'Neal, who they had for the second half after the trade deadline last year, but played really well for them. A glue guy, a hustle guy, a hard-nosed defender who plays bigger than he is and can hit outside shots. He would have been by far the best guy off the bench they had last season. Now he's not even the first guy off the bench for them. Mason Plumlee, you know, not spectacular, but still an upgrade over Eubanks. And then the big wild card for them is Ryan Dunn, because he shot the hell out of the ball in the preseason, well over 40%. His jump shot is still very much a question mark. But regardless, at the very least, he is a bigger Josh Okogie, who Okogie is only about 6'4". Ryan Dunn is 6'6", 6'7". He should have more length on that end of the court. And again, at the very least, you can put him out there for 15, 20 minutes just to play some defense. And if he hits some shots, that's just a plus. So the point is, they're way better across the board with their depth. It was a real weakness last year. I don't know if I'll go as far as to call it a strength this year, but they're at worst middle of the pack in terms of what their bench looks like across the NBA. Much better than teams like Denver, for example, the Knicks, for example, teams that are supposed to be contending this year. And then lastly, and maybe the most important of all, is just that Mike Budenholzer I mean, he has his team looking majorly different this year, at least he did in the preseason. They were a team that has been reluctant to shoot three-pointers just because their three best players are guys that kind of like to live in the mid-range, and they didn't have a point guard to kind of get set up other shots for other guys, so it was a lot of isolation ball at times. And then they had a center who didn't stretch the floor either. So they were constantly preaching that they wanted to shoot more threes, but not actually practicing what they were preaching. And so now they have a head coach who's been known to be one of the absolute best at getting teams to shoot a bunch of three-pointers. I mean, just going back down his entire career, Budenholzer, when he started with the Hawks in 2014, they ranked second in three-point attempts. Then in 2015, they were seventh. 2016, they were seventh. 2017, they had an outlier season where they only were 15th, but then his last season with the Hawks in 2018, they were seventh again. With the Bucks, he was second, then fourth, then eighth, then fifth, then fourth. This is, so he is consistently having his teams at least in the top seven or eight in terms of three-point attempts per game. He's had multiple years in the top five, a couple seasons where his team ranked second in the league, and you can see it in the postseason or in the preseason so far. I know it's preseason, but there's typically a good correlation with the type of shots you take with preseason bleeding into the regular season. And so they're taking well over 40 a game in the preseason this to this point. And so they were consistently losing the math game, and I don't know if they're going to be doing that anymore. So I do think that they have just raised their ceiling immensely by taking more threes. They've even got Nurkic saying that he's going to start shooting more threes. Don't know how effective that's going to be, but he did hit around 36-37% with Portland in his last healthy season there, and on pretty decent volume as well, over 100 attempts that season. So it's not out of the question that he could at least hit at a league average percentage, which again would go a long way for this team. And I've gone all this time, haven't even really talked about Booker and Durant, who are both still borderline top 10 players, both key contributors to the Olympic gold medal team this past summer, and guys like that are still insanely good. And Booker, who is still only 27, there's no reason to believe that he couldn't still continue to keep ascending. And I think that he's going to be a lot more comfortable, not in a full-time on-ball role this season, but being able to be a little bit more of a scorer and a sniper on the offensive end, which we know is really his sweet spot and what he's best at. So the Suns won 49 games last season. I think it is fair to think that they will win more than that this season. Whether it'll translate to the postseason is a whole different discussion, but I think a 5-game increase is fair, especially when you consider that Bradley Beal missed a huge chunk of last season. Devin Booker missed a couple weeks to a month last season as well. Like, they only had less than a handful of games played together by the time we were in January last season. So with all of those things said, I think Phoenix will win above 50 games in the 50 to 55 range. I think they will be a top three seed in the East. I still think that OKC will finish ahead of them. I think a team like Minnesota could still be ahead of them, but I think Dallas and Denver have enough flaws where I think Phoenix could finish ahead of those teams. And I think that they have a really good shot too. And so I think the Suns will be a top three seed in the West. Again, doesn't mean that they're going to translate to the postseason necessarily. I still think they have real concerns once they get there with their perimeter defense, if Ryan Dunn can't stay on the court. And I think Nurkic is still a liability come playoff times. But in terms of the regular season, Coach Bud gets teams winning a lot of games, and I think that it's going to be no different for Phoenix this season, especially considering all the star power they have. My next semi-bold prediction is that the Dallas Mavericks, after making the NBA Finals last season, will lose in the first round of the postseason. And I think a big reason why I think this is possible is because I don't see Dallas ending up with like a top two or three seed in the West this season. I think that this is a extremely Luka and Kyrie dependent team. And so I think if either one of those guys has a 15 game stretch where they don't play, then I think that they are going to really struggle for stretches of the season. Also, Luka has somehow never finished higher than the number four seed in the Western Conference to this point. I know he hasn't always had the best supporting cast, and on paper, this might be the best supporting cast he's ever had. But I just want to remind people that, look, just last year, Dallas was picked by most people to not even be in the playoffs. I think their over-under was like 44.5, 43.5, something like that. Like, there were 11 teams that I think felt like they could make the play-in last year or better. And a lot of people were picking Dallas as the odd man out. I saw people picking Dallas as the 11 seed last season. And many people had them at best in like the seven seed range. And so, obviously, they were much better than that. And but the point is just that from year to year, it's not like they're some juggernaut team. They're really dependent on two players. They have a lot of role players that they're going to rely on to replicate really good seasons for them. They made some additions that could or may or may not make them better with Klay Thompson, Najee Marshall, Quentin Grimes. But ultimately, last year they were a five seed. I think this year Dallas is going to be right in that same territory as a five seed. I still think they're going to win 50-ish games or something like that. But to me, if you're a five seed, I think you're going to have a really tough first round matchup. I think last year they did as well with the Clippers, but they were lucky in that Kawhi was not himself and then had to miss the remainder of the season. And the Clippers were just banged up. And even then, they still made it at least an entertaining close series. But I think this year you might be stuck playing someone like Denver in round one, because I think Denver will be a little bit worse. And so I'm not sure if Dallas can beat Denver. I think they could, but I might pick Denver in that series. And so I just think that the West is really tough. As I mentioned, I think the Suns will ascend to a top three seed. That means that two of the kind of presumed top four between Dallas, Denver, OKC, and Minnesota would play in the 4-5 matchup. And so that's kind of what I have happening here. I think Dallas will be in the 4-5 matchup, I think probably against Denver is what I'm going to pick. And that means one of those teams is going to lose in the first round. And so I think I trust Jokic a little bit more in that setting. I think that even though Dallas matched up really well with Minnesota last year, they caught OKC kind of a year early. I think Denver is not quite as good of a matchup for the Mavericks. And I just think that we forget that this is not a juggernaut team. I already talked about how difficult it is to make the finals in back-to-back years, and I don't think Boston will do it, but I definitely don't think Dallas will do it. I know it sounds kind of weird, but it's like because Dallas made the finals last year, I feel for sure that they're not going to make it this year because they're just not at the caliber of a team that is going to make back-to-back finals. You got to be a really damn good team to make back-to-back finals, and I don't think Dallas is that. I think they're a really good team. I think they have a spectacularly elite all-time good player in Luke on the team, a very good number two in Kyrie, and then a lot of question marks after that. Is the NBA going to figure out how to guard the lob threats out of Lively and Gafford a little better this year? Is Klay Thompson going to shoot them out of games at times? Are they going to be as good defensively, especially on the perimeter, now that they lost Derrick Jones Jr.? Like, there are a lot of question marks to this team. I'm still not super sold on Jason Kidd at all times, even though, I mean, it's hard to argue with his resume over the past few years. But the point is just that somebody good is going to lose in the first round, and Dallas probably is not going to repeat making it to the finals. So to me, they seem like a team that could end up in that 4-5 matchup and likely playing a team like Denver. And to me, I'm probably picking Denver in that series. And so I think Dallas will lose first round this year. It's not because I think Dallas is bad. I just think that they're somewhere closer to the 50-ish win five seed that they showed last season than the team that went on the run to the finals. I think they just caught a lot of the teams they played at a good time and matched up well against them. But they may not be as lucky this year with how the bracket turns out, just because the West is so deep, the West is so good, and I think they're going to have a really tough first-round matchup and have a good chance to lose. Up next, I think the Charlotte Hornets will be much better than people think, and I think they will make the play-in. It's been a rough couple years for them, without a doubt, but I think it's easy to forget that it's not that long ago that they were a pretty competent team. I know the past 2 years have been rough, winning 21 games last season and 27 the year before that, but the year before that, they went 43-39 and made the play-in. And the year before that, in LaMelo's just rookie year, they went 33-39 and also made the play-in. And that success has been wildly correlated with LaMelo's health. I mean, last year he only played 22 games and the year before that only 36. So a big reason why they were so bad is not because they just didn't have talent. It's because their best player was hurt. He's only played 58 games combined over the last two seasons. But when he played 51 out of the 72 in 2021, they made the play-in and had a somewhat respectable record. And then when he played 75 games, he made an all-star team, and this team was above 500 and had a real chance to make the playoffs. I mean, if you just look at their record with LaMelo and without LaMelo, they posted a 45% win percentage in games he's played since he came in the league and only a 31% win percentage in games he hasn't played. So they've been a drastically better team when he's played. And I know 45% winning doesn't sound awesome, but that's around 37 wins. And I think is going to be enough to get you in the play-in this year. So if they just play at what they've played when LaMelo has been healthy, then to me, they are clearly the best and most talented team outside of the consensus eight and the Hawks that are probably above them. And I think Charles Lee is going to be a good coach. I've heard nothing but good things out of him. He's already got them shooting a ton of threes in the preseason, which I think will help them offensively. And I kind of like a lot of the stuff they got on the roster. I mean, Brandon Miller, if he can take a little mini leap, then the duo of him and LaMelo could instantly be one of the better among the non-contending teams in the East. Miles Bridges is still a very competent, like, good offensive player in the league. They have good role players in Grant Williams, Josh Green, Cody Martin. Their big man duo is very respectable, in my opinion. I'm a big Mark Williams fan. I think he could be a really good rim-running, rim-protecting big for years to come. I also think he gets some pretty good touch as a shooter, even though he hasn't really displayed that to this point. And I like Nick Richards as a backup center. So I like a lot of their rotation. I've even talked about Tijon Salon, who was their first-round pick, who showed some flashes in preseason, as well as Micic, who was pretty good for them down the stretch last year, and Trey Mann in the same boat. So they've got some talent, in my opinion. I like their coach, and to me, they have potentially a really nice duo in Brandon Miller and LaMelo Ball, and they've been like so bad the past 2 years that it seems like they're maybe ready to start to try to compete again. And so it's not crazy to think that they can make the play-in just because we've seen it. The teams they made the play-in with 2 years ago and 3 years ago are not like wildly better than what they have now. They had Rozier and a banged up Hayward, but like, I mean, Miller is probably better than both of those guys, assuming he can continue his development. And I think they're going to be better coached and have better depth around those guys anyway. So I'm higher on the Hornets than consensus, I think. I've seen people talk about the Pistons, the Raptors as potential teams that could make the play-in in the East next to Atlanta. But to me, Charlotte is the clear-cut pick. And so I've got them making the play-in. And then lastly, it's time to pick my year-from-hell team. And I think it's going to be the Miami Heat. We've already started to see some ruffles in the feather between Jimmy Butler and Pat Riley. They did not offer him an extension. He is getting up there in age. And I picked the Hawks to make the playoffs, as I mentioned, which means that somebody's got to miss the playoffs in the East. And I think Miami will be that team. They have not been consistent at all over the past few seasons. They went 46-36 last year, 44-38 the year before that, 53 wins in 2022 when they were the one seed. But then again before that, 40 wins, 44 wins, 39. I mean, they've only won 47 or more games once since 2016. So we already know that they're probably going to be in the mid to low 40s as a team. And they have just run their course with this team, in my opinion. I think obviously Rozier is an offensive upgrade over what Kyle Lowry is at this point. But look, Tyler Hero is completely stagnated as a player. He's put up almost identical stats over the past few seasons. They've almost laid the second option out on a silver platter for him to take, and he just has not taken it. He's shown to be probably more fit for like a six-man role than growing into what they hoped would be a nice secondary piece or even an all-star down the road. Jimmy Butler has just not been healthy over the past few seasons. He played 60 games last year, 64 year before that, 57 year before that, 52 before that, 58. Like, he hasn't reached the 65 game mark once since he's been in Miami. And when he does play, he doesn't try very hard all the time. I mean, last season it felt like he just took games off. He looks disinterested at times offensively during the regular season. And I do like a lot of their depth and their bench pieces. I mean, Jaime Jaquez had a good year last year. Nikola Jovic looks like he could be poised for somewhat of a breakout season. I liked their first round pick, Khalil Ware. You know, they've got some pieces, but I just think that some team's going to fall out of the playoffs. To me, Miami makes the most sense because they're an old team. They're a team that historically underperforms in the regular season. They're a team that's already had some sort of rifts in the, I won't say locker room, but the whole Jimmy Butler thing hanging over the team has been a little bit not ideal, if you will, him not seeing eye to eye with Pat Riley. And so I think that Miami will miss the playoffs. I think this will be Jimmy Butler's final season in Miami, and they will not extend him and probably look to trade him in the offseason with 1 year remaining on his deal. I don't know where he'll end up. I could see Golden State making a run at him. I could see Houston trying to expedite their rebuild, among other teams that could go after him. But the point is, I've got Miami not only in the play-in, but missing the playoffs with Atlanta knocking them out, and the Hawks making the playoffs over them. And I think there's going to be some really tough decisions for Miami. But, you know, I think Pat Riley believes in the Heat culture. I don't think he thinks anyone is above it. And so I think Jimmy Butler will be the casualty of this underperformance. And as a result, this will be his last season in Miami. And the Heat will not be in the postseason for the first time since before Jimmy Butler signed there. All right, now I'm just going to do some quick heavy hitters. I think the Magic, I already touched on them my last podcast. I think they are going to be a play-in team. I think they're the trendy pick to be a top three seed. I don't see it. Don't see the offensive upside. I think that they still lack shooting. They still lack shot creation. I think that they're not going to sneak up on teams anymore. And so to me, I think they're still going to make the playoffs. They'll still be a good team. But to me, they're more in the 45 win range, especially if Franz Wagner can't make outside shots. So I think that they are going to be a little worse than what people think, more in the 7 seed range. I also think the Sixers will avoid the play-in, but I think it'll be barely. I'm quite scared off by the Embiid injury stuff. He's already not going to play opening night. Paul George is already not going to play opening night. And if they're not without those guys, it's going to be a long season. Their winning percentage without Embiid is not good over the past few seasons, even for how good it has been with him in the lineup. Too many questions for me there. I just see them as maybe more of a postseason threat than a regular season team, which sounds crazy coming from them, but it sounds like they do want to sort of save Embiid for later in the year. So I could see them being more in the 6 seed range rather than a top seed in the East, even though probably Sixers fans have the optimism for them to be a top team in the East. I think that they're going to be below teams like Indiana, below teams like Cleveland, and they will avoid the play-in, but I don't think it'll be by a lot. I have Brandon Pajemski winning my most improved player this season. He's not one of the big favorites to win it, but I love this guy. If you've listened to my podcast or seen anything on my social media, you know that I'm a big pods guy. I think that he is now going to be the third best player in the Warriors after Steph and Draymond. Now that he's starting next to Steph, he's going to bring so many intangibles that Klay did not bring. I think he's a solid defender. He led the NBA in charges taken last season, despite not even being a full-time starter. He is a very plus shooter, shot around 39% last season. He is a good secondary playmaker and passer, good feel for the game, high IQ player, elite rebounder for his size, nice little floater game. I just like everything about him. I think he's the type of player that in his prime could average 18, 9, and 5 or 6 assists per game. He may not reach those totals this year, but I think he will make a big enough of a leap to warrant winning that award. I know mostly it's gone to players who were pretty good to all-star leap. I think it'll go from a guy who was a solid bench piece to a high-level starter as soon as this season. So I think Pajemski will win my most improved player. Then a couple guys I have as first-time All-NBA players this year, Victor Wembanyama. I think that's probably not that bold of a take. I think a lot of people are going to predict that. I could see him being as high as second team this season. I don't think he'll get to first just because I don't think the Spurs will be good enough, but I think he's going to be just a monster on both ends of the court. I think his efficiency will be a lot better than it was last year just because he's got Chris Paul to actually feed him the ball instead of guys like Jeremy Sochan trying to play point guard on this team. But I think you could see him learning to make the right reads in real time last season as he was improving throughout the year. He still is a monster defensively. He's the big favorite to win Defensive Player of the Year this year. Wouldn't be surprised if he did that. He'd probably be my pick, but I think he will get into the All-NBA picture this season and probably make a team. Another one, Paolo Banchero. I know I was down on the Magic, but none of that is because Paolo. I think he's spectacular. He took a nice little mini leap last season. I think he can take another nice little mini leap this season. Still needs to up his efficiency a little bit, but that efficiency can be a little deceiving at times because he's been asked to do so much for this team because they don't have anybody else that can create. But I love what he does as a passer and playmaker. He's still an elite shot creator. He can score at all three levels. I just think he's going to be a top 10-ish player in his prime, and I think this will be the year that he jumps to the All-NBA range as well. And then my last one is Zion Williamson, who has probably been good enough and put up big enough stats to make it in the past, but maybe hasn't played enough games or the Pelicans weren't good enough. But I think he looks great coming into the season this year for the first time in a while. He finally had a healthy season last year. The Pelicans look like they are at least contenders to make the playoffs, if not favorites to get in some capacity. And so I think Zion is just a special talent. I think the Pelicans are at their best when he has the ball in his hands. We saw that firsthand last year in their play-in game when he was just single-handedly bringing them back against the Lakers before he got hurt. So I think Zion will make an All-NBA team this season as well. And then lastly, I think Josh Giddey is going to prove everyone wrong in the sense that the Bulls got roasted for not getting a pick back in the Caruso trade. I think that he is going to be so much better in finally in a role that I think fits him. I mean, last year he was asked to basically be a stand in the corner, shoot three pointers type guy, a off ball player that doesn't get to create much. And that's not what he's good at. He's good with the ball in his hands. He's a very plus playmaker and passer, especially for his position. He's an initiator on offense. He's a very good rebounder for his size. He can score a little bit as well. I mean, it's so easy to forget that at 20 years old, he was only 20 years old, and he averaged 17 points, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists for a Thunder team. It's not like they were the bottom of the West. They were in the play-in. They were a 40-win team. He was the second-best player on a play-in team in the West, which is really difficult, and he was spectacular that season. He obviously regressed a bit last year, but it was just because everyone around him got so much better that he was forced into a marginalized role. And so I think him next to Kobe White, love that pairing because White is actually a really good off-ball player, a good shooter and floor spacer. So I think Giddey will play more of the point guard with White playing sort of like a combo guard type role for the Bulls. But I think people are going to look back and this will be a big win of a trade for the Bulls long-term because the guy turned 22 like 2 weeks ago. So the fact that people just gave up on him so quickly, I don't really get it. To me, Giddey is a better asset long term than Caruso even is. He's right around 30 and he's spectacular at what he does, but for a team like the Bulls, I'd rather have Josh Giddey straight up. So it makes sense to me why they didn't need to get a pick back, and I think that he will be a much better version of himself, closer to what he was earlier in his career with Oklahoma City, and he's got a lot of time to still turn into a really good player, just considering how young he is and now the opportunity that he has in Chicago. So now moving to my full-on predictions. In the Eastern Conference, I think the top six seeds that will clinch a playoff berth and avoid the play-in will be the Celtics as the one seed. Got them at 59 wins. The Knicks as the two seed at 54 wins. At the three seed, I actually have the Cleveland Cavaliers at 53 wins. I think the Atkinson upgraded coach will be big for them. And then I have the Bucks as the four seed at 52 wins. As I mentioned, I think that they'll be a solid regular season team, but they can really shine in the postseason. As the five seed, I have the Pacers at 50 wins, so a little bit better than last year. They can build off their conference finals run. Then the Sixers as the six seed at 47 wins. And as I mentioned, I'm just a little scared off by the fact that Embiid is not going to play back-to-backs. He's already not going to be ready for the start of the season. Paul George is already out to start the season. I just think that they're not going to get enough games out of their top guys to be one of the top seeds in the conference. I think that at full strength, they're a very, very good team. And if they can finally stay healthy and get out of their own way, they could even make the finals. But I think for the regular season, top of the East is a little better than it was last year. And so I think they could fall a little bit in the standings to the sixth seed. Again, still 47 wins, not a bad season by any means. But yeah, then the play-in, I have the Magic as the seventh seed at 45 wins. A little bit of regression from them this year, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast. Then I've got the Hawks at 44 wins as the eighth seed. Mentioned that I'm higher on them. The Miami Heat as the nine seed at 43 wins. Again, I said season from hell, 43 wins, kind of on par with where they've been over the past few seasons. But just in terms of not making the playoffs, I think that they would view that as a huge failure, obviously. Then 10 seed, I've got the Hornets at 36 wins. So pretty big drop off between 9 and 10. But again, somebody's got to make that 10 seed, and I think the Hornets will do it in the play-in. Then from here on out, the lottery teams that will not be in the play-in, the Bulls as the 11 seed at 27 wins, the Pistons at the 12 seed, 26 wins, the Raptors at the 13 seed, 25 wins, the Nets as the 14 seed with 18 wins, and then I think the Wizards will actually be the bottom team in the East with 15 wins as the 15 seed. So that's my Eastern Conference regular season. Come postseason time, I think the Celtics will obviously knock off the Hawks in round one. I think the Knicks will handle the Magic in round one as well. The Cavs-Sixers series, I think, could be really fun. I am going to pick the Sixers to win this one, despite them being the lower seed. I think they're definitely more legitimate of a contender than the Cavaliers, especially just given the Cavs' struggle over the past few years. Assuming that Embiid can at least play, even if he's a somewhat compromised version of himself, I still think they could beat the Cavaliers. I think that'll be a 6 or 7 game series, but I am going to pick Philadelphia to move on. Then a rematch of the Bucks and Pacers in round one. This time, hopefully with Giannis and Dame healthy. I have the Bucks winning this one, obviously. Second round, Celtics-Bucks. This is where I have the Celtics losing in the second round, as I mentioned. I already kind of revealed that I have the Bucks in the final. So I think that'll be a really competitive 7-game series with the Bucks winning game 7 in Boston and knocking off the defending champions. Then on the other side of the bracket, Knicks and Sixers. I've got the Knicks over the Sixers winning in 6 games. I think the Sixers are better than they were last year, but I think the Knicks are also better than they were last year. So I think the series will go somewhat similarly to it did a year ago. And I think that the Knicks just are more trustworthy at this point, given the health concerns with the Sixers and the fact that we've never seen Embiid make a conference finals. So I told myself I will not pick that until I see it. So I will stay with that, and I will not pick them to make conference finals until I see it. Then in the conference finals, I got Bucks-Knicks. I've got the Bucks beating the Knicks. I think it'll be a competitive series, but I think the Knicks ultimately don't really have a ton of bodies to throw at Giannis. It's really just Anunoby. And again, I'm skeptical that Anunoby can even make it through 3 playoff rounds because we've never actually seen him do that. He's only made it to the conference finals once, and he was injured the entire playoff. So then I have the Bucks making the finals as the representative out of the Eastern Conference. Moving to the West, I have the Oklahoma City Thunder as the one seed, no shocker there, with 60 wins. I've got the Minnesota Timberwolves as the 2 seed with 54 wins. I am lower on the Wolves overall compared to what they could have been, but I do still think they're going to be a good regular season team. I think they're really deep. I think the Gobert gives them a really high floor defensively. I think Anthony Edwards will continue to ascend to superstardom. And, you know, I think with DiVincenzo, Naz Reid, Julius Randle, McDaniels, even Rob Dillingham, Mike Conley, they've got a lot of really good pieces. And so I think they're just going to be a really solidly deep, good defensive regular season team. And so they'll still be a 2 seed. I have the Suns as the 3 seed at 53 wins, as I mentioned previously. I have the Nuggets as the 4 seed at 51 wins, taking a little bit of a step back just because of their concerns with their depth, the uncertainty with Murray being a little shaky really since the postseason last year, and Westbrook being a total unknown and potentially very negative wild card for them. Then the 5 seed, I have Dallas. Still winning 50 games, as I mentioned, still a successful season, just not maybe quite as high as some other people have them. Then I have the Grizzlies sneaking into the 6 seed with 46 wins. I think there's a little bit of a drop off between 5 and 6. I think those top 5 teams are the clear top 5 teams in the West, but I do think Memphis will win enough games to avoid the play-in. I do think that they'll bounce back relatively nicely, but still not be a true contender in the West. Then among the play-in teams, we've got the Lakers as the 7 seed with 44 wins. Lakers were one of the more difficult teams for me to pinpoint. On one hand, they've got two borderline top 10 players. On the other hand, they're both injury prone. They don't have a lot after that. Their depth is questionable. But I do think that they have the tools to pull off an in-season trade that could help them a ton with the contracts of Hachimura and D'Angelo Russell, plus some picks that they have. I also think J.J. Redick is going to have them looking a lot more crisp offensively. Anthony Davis has already looked like a much better version of himself, especially from the outside and shooting the ball in the preseason than he has over the past few seasons. And look, they've been in the 45 win-ish range over the past couple years, so I think they'll stay around there, and I think that'll probably be enough for them to get into the play-in and then make the playoffs from there. I have the Pelicans as the 8 seed, also at 44 wins. They're a really hard team for me to pinpoint to because I wouldn't be shocked if they were the 5 or 6 seed. I also wouldn't be shocked if they were like the 10 or 11 seed. I just think that they've got a lot of talent. I'm not entirely sure how it all fits together, and they have a huge hole at center. But as mentioned, I think they will address the center position thing before the end of the year. So I do think they that plus the fact that Zion, I think, will have a really, really good year, all-NBA level. They will get in the playoffs, but not as a top seed or anything like that. Then at the 9 seed, I have the Warriors at 43 wins. I think the Warriors will be like a pretty good team. I go back and forth on them too because I like a lot of their additions. I'm a big D'Anthony Melton fan. I think Buddy Hield is going to pretty much bring anything that Clay was bringing last year, but maybe with less of a green light, which is probably a good thing. Kyle Anderson will be a decent addition. Trayce Jackson-Davis looked really good as a rookie. I'm obviously a big Pajemski fan. Kuminga had his best season yet. Wiggins, you know, if you get anything out of him, it'd be nice at this point. So they've got a deep rotation, but ultimately they have one star, and if Steph misses 20 games, they're screwed. And so I just don't see how they're going to get to 45, 50 wins unless Steph plays like literally 75 plus games, which it's possible, but he is old, man. He's he's getting up there in age, 36, 37 years old, and so I can't really say for certain he'll do that, so I think they'll fall just short. Then at the 10th seed, I have the Sacramento Kings with 42 wins. I went back and forth on them. I certainly could see them sneaking in the postseason, but I just don't think the DeRozan addition is what they needed. I like DeRozan as a player, but he kind of goes against the playing style they want to play. It's also a very bad spacing fit between him and Sabonis, and I don't know. I think that they've got some of the lower upside among all the teams in the West, and I think it's really loaded. And so I think they'll be competitive. I think they'll just be a victim of the conference being pretty tough. Then getting to the non-plan or playoff teams, the lottery locks that we have, the Houston Rockets is the 11th seed going 41-41. I like the Rockets. I just think they're being a little overvalued. Again, I love Şengün. He's still a step below most of the other team's best players in the Western Conference, so they kind of lack a lot of the star power. They do make up for that with a ridiculous amount of depth, obviously, but I think the thing for me is Jalen Green. I already talked about it earlier. I'm not a Jalen Green guy. I just think that as long as he's on this team and taking over 15 shots a game, that it limits their ceiling tremendously. I don't see it for him as a star player, at least not as currently constructed. He'd need to make significant strides. And so, look, I think they'll be about 500, but I just think it's going to be really tough for them to get in the playoffs, just given all the other teams ahead of them that are going for it this season. So I think they're probably a year away. At the 12th seed, I have the San Antonio Spurs with 34 wins. I toyed with them, maybe getting close to 500, making the play-in, but, you know, they still only won 22 games last year. So this would be a 12-win increase for them. So it's still huge progress for them. I don't know if they can go from 22 to over 40 wins. That's a pretty big jump for a team that added a 39-year-old point guard and Harrison Barnes, you know. Devin Vassell is already injured to start the year. I just think they're still a little bit talent-deprived, especially offensively. And so they're going to need another transaction cycle to add somebody before I can put them in that tier. Then at the 13th seed, I had the Los Angeles Clippers, as previously mentioned, with 30 wins. Just don't think Kawhi is going to play enough for them to be competitive. Then at 14, we've got the Utah Jazz, 24 wins, and the Portland Trail Blazers last in the conference at 20 wins. So in the playoffs, I've got the Thunder and the Pelicans meeting in the first round for the second time in a row. I have the Thunder beating them for the second time in a row. Then we've got the Wolves and the Lakers in round one. I actually think this will be a really competitive series. I have the Wolves winning in seven. I'm lower on the Wolves come playoff time compared to last year, just because I think that going from Cat to Randall is a big downgrade, especially next to Gobert, and I just don't love that as a postseason combo. And I think the Lakers could be interesting, but, you know, I'm not going to go all the way there because I'm not even sure the Lakers will definitely make the postseason, so I'm going to have the Wolves moving on still. Then Suns-Grizzlies, I've got the Suns beating Memphis in this one going in the second round. Then Nuggets-Mavericks, I talked about this earlier. I think this is going to be one of those series where the loser is very dissatisfied with how their season went and has to reevaluate where they're at. Just because of how tough the West is. And so I think Denver will win the series and Dallas will fall short in round one, unfortunately for them, as I mentioned in the predictions I said earlier. In round two, I think the Thunder will take down the Nuggets. I think that they are deeper. I think that they have more shooting. I trust just what they have after their star guy a lot more. And so I'm high in the Thunder this year. I think they're going to be really, really good. And I think Denver's depth is just not going to be good enough for them to make a deep run this season unless they add some players. Then Wolves, Suns, a rematch of the first round this past season. I am still going to pick the Wolves, but I think it'll be a much better series. Obviously, the Suns got swept this past season, but I think it's going to be Wolves in seven this time. And I already said I'm lower on the Wolves, but I just still am really wary of the Suns with Yusuf Nurkic as the starting center. If they can make an upgrade, trade him in a draft pick to get a better defensive player, more athletic, more versatile player there, then I think maybe they could make more of a run in the postseason. But until they do that, it's going to be really hard to have a Yusuf Nurkic team making the conference finals. I just don't think he's a guy that you can have that much success with as your starting center. So in the conference finals, we have Thunder and Wolves. I think the Thunder win this one. I think this is not that competitive of a series. I think it's a terrible matchup for Minnesota just because I think they can play Gobert off the court. I think that they've got the perimeter defenders and length and size to bother Anthony Edwards similarly to how he was against Dallas last year. And I don't think the Wolves are just going to have enough offense to be able to stick with the Thunder. So I've got the Thunder making the finals. That makes the Bucks and Thunder my finals pick, and I went back and forth on this, but ultimately, I did go with the Thunder winning the NBA Finals this season. I still think that a lot of things need to break their way for them to actually win it. Most notably, as I mentioned in my contender tiers last episode, they need either Jalen Williams to emerge as a key, legitimate, consistent, reliable second scorer, or they need to add another scorer. But I think Jalen Williams can do it. And so I'm projecting that. And I also think they have a ton of assets that if they're cruising as the number one seed in the West this year, maybe Sam Presti actually finally makes a splash. They have basically unlimited draft capital to go out and overpay for basically whoever they want. And I think if they do that, then it will only push them even more as the favorite in the West, especially. But I just think they're really well-rounded. I trust their health a little bit more than other teams just because they're so young. I think they're well-coached. They're good on both ends. They're versatile. And SGA is like proving himself to be a legitimate top five star in the NBA. And I just think by the time Milwaukee gets to the finals, they're going to be pretty burnt out. I mean, I know that I'm going out on a limb, taking a team like them with injury concerns, an older team, with Doc Rivers as head coach, even making the finals. And so I just think there's a lot more question marks with Milwaukee than OKC. So I'm going to pick the Thunder to win it all this season. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. Thank you so much for listening. Those are my formal picks for the season, as well as a bevy of semi-bold predictions and takes for this year. Also, as I mentioned at the top of this podcast, please go check out my top 100 player rankings, where I do deep dives on the top 50, as well as little brief overviews on numbers 51 through 100. Would love to hear feedback. Who's too high? Who's too low? I love a good debate, obviously. But yeah, looking forward to the season. It tips off literally within hours from now. So by the time you're listening to this, the season will probably have already started. And we will see if any of my semi-bold predictions hit through as the season goes on. But with that said, thank you so much for listening, and I will chat with you soon. We'll
Thank you.